Why do Chinese girls taste different from all other girls?
You think we're better, huh?
No, just different. Like Peking duck is different from Russian caviar, but I love them both.
Darling, I give you very best duck.
Well, that'd be lovely. We have had some interesting times together, Ling. Are you sorry to go?
Hello, my name is Thomas, and welcome to the podcast British Culture, Albion Never Dies. What you just heard was a clip from the 1967 film You Only Live Twice with Sean Connery and Cy Chin as Ling. This scene apparently took 3 days to film, according to The Guardian, and it was the first time that James Bond had visited Hong Kong. He never visited in the original novels by Ian Fleming, which is surprising because Ian Fleming had visited and described it as the most vivid and exciting city he had ever experienced. Normally, if something makes a big impression on Ian Fleming, he'll put it straight into the books. If it's an attribute of his own, he'll give it to James Bond. For example, Ian Fleming was a Royal Naval Reserve commander during the Second World War. This rank is given to James Bond. Ian Fleming had a fantastic visit to Istanbul with a very colourful local guide. This is given to James Bond in From Russia with Love. So for him to have such a vivid and exciting experience and not reference it in the James Bond novels is really quite unusual. He does write about it in 1963's travelogue, Thrilling Cities, and there he's largely following in the footsteps of another British author, Richard Mason, who had taken the British literary scene by storm with his book The World of Susie Wong, about a British sailor who falls in love with a prostitute in Hong Kong. This was then adapted to the West End in 1959 and again became a huge hit and helped a young Cy Chin in her big breakout role. It's her who is in the scene with Sean Connery. She was the first Chinese student at RADA, the Royal Academy of Dramatic Art. It's been well covered elsewhere, how Hong Kong became a British Crown colony. It starts, of course, with the First Opium War in 1842, and then the territory expands from not just the islands, but to Kowloon in 1860 in the Second Opium War. Gladstone described these wars as infamous and atrocious, but the American historian John K. Fairbank had argued that actually any product would have resulted in much the same war, and indeed between any European power, or indeed North American power and China, given that the resolution of the wars was largely over free trade and equal diplomatic recognition. China had been rejecting diplomatic missions really since the McCartney mission of 1793. European states were very used to the idea of representing each other on equal terms in diplomatic missions ever since the Treaty of Westphalia in 1648, which ended the 30 Years' War, that terrible war killed about 8 million people, and the treaties afterwards helped establish a norm of diplomatic relations. But of course, China had no part in the 30 Years' War, and it had no effect on China. China at this time was more concerned with internal rebellions than with foreign missions, and even at the height of the Opium Wars, paid relatively little attention to it. After all, nothing historically had come from these small fishing islands. And yet, these small fishing islands grew and grew to be a hugely successful city. Even now, Hong Kong is home to the second largest number of billionaires anywhere in the world, outside New York, according to Forbes magazine. It is a hugely successful city, and its transformation from a series of small Cantonese fishing villages to a mega city that whoever you are, wherever you are in the world listening, you've probably heard of, is a tremendous success. Here's a clip from a 1938 American travelogue all about Hong Kong. It's worth a listen.
Under tolerant and wise British rule, with willing Oriental assistance, has grown a modern Western city in an Eastern setting, where more than 1 million contented Chinese dwell in harmony, merging their ancient civilization, culture, and manners with those of the 20,000 Europeans who guide or minister to them.
You can find the full video on YouTube. In 1941, however, this peace was shattered. On the same morning as the attack on Pearl Harbor, the day that shall live in infamy, the Empire of Japan attacked the British Crown colony of Hong Kong. The attack was in violation of international law because, as with the attack on the USA, Japan had not declared war against the British Empire. Within a week, the British, Indian, and Canadian defenders had abandoned Kowloon and retreated to the island of Hong Kong. Less than 2 weeks later, the governor of Hong Kong, Sir Mark Acheson Young, surrendered on Christmas Day. He did so in person at the Japanese headquarters on the third floor of the Peninsula Hotel. The hotel was then repurposed as a resort exclusively for Japanese officers and high-ranking dignitaries. As such, it became a prime target for air attacks by the Allies. Quote has been read by Donnie Waldron of Quantum of History.
So I looped above Victoria Harbor and dove for the Peninsula Hotel. My tracers were ripped into the shining plate glass of the penthouse on its top, and I saw the broken windows cascade like snow to the streets by the floors below. I laughed, for I knew that behind those windows were Japanese high officers enjoying that modern hotel. When I got closer, I could see uniformed figures going down the fire escapes, and I shot at them. I turned for one more run on the packed fire escapes filled with Jap soldiers, but my next burst ended very suddenly. I was out of ammunition.
The Peninsula Hotel was incidentally referred to by Ian Fleming in his travelogue Thrilling Cities in the Incidental Intelligence section of Chapter 1. This is what he said. By tradition, and probably correctly, the Peninsula, the Pen, on the Kowloon Peninsula is regarded as the number one hotel for visitors to a colony. It now has an annex, Peninsula Court. Rates are from Hong Kong $70 to Hong Kong $100, double. Very colonial, comfortable, proper. It is generally booked fully for months in advance. It's perhaps with this piece of Fleming's writing in mind that we'd hear about it next in 1974's film The Man with the Golden Gun. Here's a little clip from the film.
Now, get onto the License Bureau and trace that car. AU603, a green rose.
A green rose?
A green Rose Royce. There can't be that many in Hong Kong.
Courtesy cars. All green Rolls Royces belong to the Peninsula Hotel. You see what a 2-year posting to Staff Intelligence does for a girl?
That's Miss Mary Goodnight, played by Britt Eklund, who spent 2.5 years in Hong Kong. I spent over 5 years just north of Hong Kong, in Shenzhen, and I can confirm that all the green Rolls Royces I've ever seen in Hong Kong do indeed belong to the Peninsula Hotel. These days they have a fleet of 14 extended wheelbase Rolls Royce Phantoms, and they're all painted in the signature Peninsula Green. If you'd like to be welcomed in style from the airport, you can pay for an airport transfer. The airport is 21 miles away, 35.9 kilometres, and the cost of an airport transfer in one of the Peninsula Green Rolls Royces is 1,800 Hong Kong dollars one way. That's £166 or US$232. However, if you are feeling particularly flush, you could use the helicopter service, which costs 33,500 Hong Kong dollars. Again, for those in the UK, £3,108, for those in the US, $4,320. What kind of person would have that money just ready to burn? You'd have to be Batman. And of course, in the 2007 movie The Dark Knight, there was a section set in Hong Kong, and we see Morgan Freeman taking the helicopter and landing on the top of the Peninsula Hotel. I have seen helicopters land. It is something that happens in real life too. And it's interesting that Christopher Nolan chose to use this hotel. He's often cited the Bond franchise as a major influence on his work, and people often note the Dark Knight trilogy's influence on the modern Bond films as well. So, it's a lot of money, but no expense was spared on the Peninsula Hotel when it was first created. According to the South China Morning Post, it cost $3 million. When it first opened in 1928. I won't convert that into modern currency. I'm sure you appreciate just how much that was, and that was put in by the Kadori family. The Qadori family is a British Jewish family, originally Mizrahi Jews from Baghdad, who moved from Baghdad to the Raj, Bombay, in the 18th century, where they made their fortune, and then moved in the 19th century to Shanghai, which is where they were when they financed the development of the Peninsula Hotel, the Grand Dame of the Far East. They'd been living in Hong Kong since 1949. The wealth that was spent on the creation of this hotel is really evident from the tea lounge, which you see when you first walk in. And it's a great shame neither the Dark Knight nor the Man of the Golden Gun show this. It is one of the most beautiful hotel lounges I've ever seen. And you can just sit, have tea, look around and appreciate not only the modern environment, but also how nice it was when it was first opened. As you can see, the enormous south-facing windows. Originally, they had faced onto Victoria Harbour, a 16-square-mile natural harbour, and you'd have had the breeze blow straight off the harbour into the hotel, and you can see, although it's all glassed up now, you can see where the original hinges would have been for the gigantic wooden shutters, allowing in just enough breeze, not too much sunlight, and of course it would all be closed up during the monsoon season. Around the tea lounge is the arcade, one of the oldest fashion arcades in Hong Kong. You can see any number of international brands, Gucci, which of course had its wonderful tie to the Man of the Golden Gun, so that Roger Moore has his Gigi belt as he goes to meet the Man of the Golden Gun, Prada, which has a tie into the more recent Bond films, and also Van Cleef & Arpels. And there has been an afternoon tea tie-in with this jewellery brand. As I remember, we got a notebook and you could get a discount. There have been multiple tie-ins over the years. And again, I believe that the afternoon tea in the Peninsula Hotel is absolutely not to be missed. It does have the reputation of being the best British-style afternoon tea east of the Suez Canal. This was always its claim, and I think is probably still true. I haven't found anything better out here myself. And one of the tie-ins that was spectacularly successful was the Hello Kitty afternoon tea that just seemed to bring out all of the Cantonese who really wanted to try this. There's no reservations at the afternoon tea. You line up, and I took my girlfriend to the Hello Kitty one, and we queued up for well over an hour, and it was well worth it. We got a beautiful little book of Hello Kitty visiting the Peninsula Hotel and going out on a little boat on Victoria Harbour, and the afternoon tea itself was themed. So they do have these special little tie-ins from time to time. The Christmas one is a real treat, and on the upper levels of the arcade they'll have a pianist and a quartet playing Christmas music, and of course there's music playing throughout the year. So in this podcast we've started out with Sean Connery, we've moved on to the Opium Wars, the Second World War, the huge wealth that was poured into this hotel to make it the very, very best it could possibly be, and finished on Hello Kitty. I think this is a very good place to leave it. Thank you very much for joining me. My name is Thomas. Thank you for listening to this episode of British Culture, Albion Never Dies. Feel free to contact me on Instagram at Fleming Never Dies, and I hope you enjoy this podcast. Thank you very much.